Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And today we're inviting you to join us with a visit to probably the most multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-everything city I've seen in a long time. It's called Toronto, which is in Ontario, Canada.
In case you didn't know.
Yeah, well, in case you didn't know, some people don't know.
Just a little bit up the road from Niagara Falls, just in case you're trying to figure out where it is and you really don't know.
And it's a really burgeoning scene, food scene particularly, restaurant scene. And we were there to check that out and also to explore the Taste of Toronto, which is part of that Taste of series that started in London and travels around the world.
We talked to you about that a couple of weeks ago, so
right.
You already know about that. In fact, maybe you were even there at the event and we didn't see you. There were supposed to be 20,000 people going through Fort York enjoying all the food and drink, so it was a big crowd, and we were just a little part of it. It was sunny every day. In fact, it was almost too hot. Something that Canadians, in particular, don't really complain about. So we hadn't been in Toronto for a long time, and we were startled at the growth of the city in many, many respects, including construction. But what we were most excited about is this rapidly changing and very, very interesting dining scene that we got to sample.
A little bit of just about everything you'd ever heard about.
So we're bringing you a little bit of everything today, and we'll bring you a little bit of everything on the same subject next week. So don't forget to tune in then as well. Make sure you mark it down. And let's see, who are we starting off with today?
One of my heroes, and this is the first time we actually got to interview him. People have always told us how shy he is, but I didn't think he was shy. He came and sat there and all of us at the in the press corps and talked to us.
He gives you an idea that the Toronto dining scene is, if it's not already important, is going to be important, because guess what? He was chosen with his partners to develop a restaurant on top of the new One World Trade Center in New York City, no less.
Right. His name is Susur Lee.
And his kitchen cooks wonderful Chinese food.
Susur Lee is like an icon in my world. I've had your cookbooks. I've watched your programs on TV. I've never had a chance to talk to you. And I didn't realize until now, we're in your restaurant eating your food, everything is exactly up to all the rave reviews I got about your talent. I'm so happy to talk to you. Please talk to me. Tell me how you're enjoying your new restaurant.
Very, very much. I come from Hong Kong. That's how I grew up, Cantonese, and love food since I was a little boy. And opening a Chinese restaurant, it's just really so close to my heart, because I can always eat in my own kitchen now. Every time if I decide I want to have dim sum, I feel like dim sum, I just say, give me one ha gao right away. So the chef doesn't even know it's actually for me, So I love it. And also a great education to go back to my roots, what I have learned, what I have seen. In terms of back to Singapore, I have my Chinese restaurant in Singapore in Sentosa. So, Tong Lok Hin. And so, I live in Singapore for a few years. So, my Chinese restaurant in Singapore is extremely, beautiful. And also, the food is extremely beautiful to eat and also to look at. Because I started that style of Nouvelle Chinese cooking about almost 16 years ago. That was the first time Chinese food ever served individually. So it actually passed it back to China. Now, Chinese food in China now serving individually, also serving in the communal plating. So I'm very proud to see the trace of, of Chinese food is going right now.
Now, I always thought that the really high-end Chinese food was from Hong Kong. And then there were regional differences about how you see this. You see it as a different thing. Explain, this is a lot to ask you, I know, but if you look at the geography the culinary picture of China? How do the different tastes come down?
Well, if you look at China right now, if you look from north to south, east and west, China have become one style of Chinese food. It's just great Chinese food. What that means is that the south would borrow food from the north, and the north can borrow food from the south. So, of course, there are certain regions are very strong in their particular dishes, but now it's such an influence from the outside world, and actually you would find more inventive Chinese food outside of China than actually in China. Because, of course, ingredients is getting much better. I'm talking about outside of Asia, outside of China. So there are more better chef learning, the better techniques in terms of more inventive, you know, have better technology to use. Look at, for example, Dongbo Ru is a Shanghainese dish. It's a pork belly dish. They braise in a pot with lots of wine, a lot of sweet wine and spices and herb. But now the chef actually used sous vide to do the Dongbo Ru, and it just melts in your mouth. You don't even need, you eat with a spoon. They used to have like chopsticks, but now you can eat with a spoon. So the big revolution of Chinese cooking have implemented actually with some Western technology.
You know, I should have figured that out, because Chinese food would be the prime example for taking advantage of cooking techniques like sous vide. I mean, it's perfect. Yeah, I never thought of that. You were telling me wonderful things I didn't know before. You've opened a number of restaurants, but you're thinking that this one is like the one that's truest to your heart?
It is. Lucky is really true to my heart because, with all the learning from China, Hong Kong, Singapore, all the recipe, all the taste that I have taste, and then I'm bringing to the West. Now I can really express to what I see in my eye with my journey about Chinese food. But in a great, still have a very strong integrity of great techniques of steaming, great techniques of frying, great techniques of wok frying. So with all that, I still implement some of the new ideas. For example, you know, everybody knows about char siu pork, which is a Chinese barbecue pork. Then I use char siu beef. So giving another way of looking, you don't have to eat pork. You can also eat beef in a char siu style. So there are so many great things about in our city because of such a multicultural. And everybody just really accepting new things. And they willingly to try things. And they don't find it strange at all. And they find it is very inventive. And they're very embraced with my food.
You know, I mean, I've really been trying to get an interview with you for a long time. You were a really big TV star. And yet everybody kept telling me you didn't like to do interviews because you were so shy. I don't find any of that true. I mean, I don't understand. Why do they always say that?
No, actually, you know what? I think, there are points in your life, just people itself. Some people just decide, hey, you know, today I don't like people. Leave me alone. It is a nature. Because we see so many people from staff, from kitchen, from front of the house, from customer. Sometimes you want to go into yourself. I don't think the word is shy. I think it's a little bit more introverted. But when I, like, full of energy and happy that day, I make great dishes. No, it just come naturally. I don't feel that it is something that is I was feeling shy to talk to anybody, especially expressing my food. I think it's a very natural thing for me.
Now, you have a lot of plans for the future, including involving your sons.
I have three sons, you know, Kai and Levi and Jet. They grew up in the restaurant, you know, as young as when they were like 3-4 years old. I make a dough, put it on the floor with a tray, so I babysit while I'm cooking with my first restaurant, Lotus. So, you know, by the end they grow up, you know, they went to university and they were great competitor, tennis, and they got scholarships. But by the end, he came back and said, Dad, you know, I don't feel like doing tennis. I want to be in the restaurant business. So I said, well, you know, I said, come on in. But if you woke up one day, you said, Dad, I hate my job, no problem. Choose your own life. So I think they come into the business very naturally, which I'm very happy because now they're 25 and 23 years old, and two of them, I see them every day. You know, they would call me and say, which restaurant are you coming tonight? Because they want to see me, and I want to see them. So I have Bent and also Lee and Lucky, so, you know, I see them. Like, with that age, it's amazing seeing them every day.
Now, you're associated with so many different restaurants, and they're all a little bit different, but there are certain dishes that you're associated with. Could you just describe some of the dishes you think are associated with you personally?
Well, for example, my restaurant, Lee, I developed Singaporean slaw. When everybody says slaw, well, your signature dish is like slaw. What's the big deal? And then when I tell them that I have actually 19 different ingredients in that slaw salad, it all year round is a vegan dish very, very fresh and a lot of flavors. And it's not something you marinated with mayonnaise. It is something you toss in a moment. And it's a dish that I culturally learned when I was living in Singapore. When the Hakka and also Teochew, because Singapore is a state. And there are so many people coming from Malaysia, Thailand, or China when they migrate there and they have to develop their own Chinese dish. But Singapore is very hot. It's in Southeast Asia. So the slaw, it comes into a place. It's one of the dish that is a cold salad that they actually put in the middle of the table in the beginning during Chinese New Year. And everybody stand up, start tossing and say, Lohei. Lohei means upgrading. We're going to do better. It's sort of a symbolically another great year. So when I learned that salad, it's only 12 ingredients. So I top it up another 6, another 7. So it become my signature. And recently I just developed another salad, which you just had tonight. And I turn it into my slaw soba salad. And it's just wonderful for beginning, high acidity, and also a little bit sweetness from brown sugar, and also with a little bit chili oil, and also the word malat. Malat is the Sichuan peppercorn, and also with 19 ingredients in the salad. So it is a great beginning.
I have two final questions. One is, how long have you been a chef?
I started in 1974. I was back in Hong Kong. As apprentice. I've been cooking. That's the only job I ever done in my whole life, a real job. So I'm still loving it every moment, and I'm still doing it. So until now, since 1974.
The second question is, rumors have been flying for a long time. Are you opening a restaurant soon in New York?
Yes, it's in planning because that, you know, it's a very important building in the world. It's an iconic building. So there are many levels. Oh, at the World Trade Center. So it's in a planning state, you know, because we have few partners doing all that. So it's a slow process.
Well, I'm loving you, Chef. Thank you. I'm loving your food. The personality, the charm meets up with real good quality and fabulous food. And thank you so much for talking to us.
Well, thank you. Have a great evening.
And we'll be back after a short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Next, we're going to run you through a series of brief interviews that we did actually at Taste of Toronto, starting with my favorite burger, and we'll hear why.
there's two other interviews in this segment of the program. Do you want to say anything about those two?
Sure. We're going to be talking to Corey Vitiello of the Harford Room and Ben Heaton of the Grove, which is probably one of the highest profile chefs going. And that's it.
Spit it out, dear. It's really interesting. There's quite a lot of ethnic difference. It's hard to refer to my native land as ethnic, I guess, but Ben Heaton is in fact from Leeds, not too far from where I grew up. And Corey Vitello's family is of Italian extraction. But anyway, Richmond Station, the Harford Room and the Grove are all places that should be on your Toronto dining wish list. And here are the chefs just to further convince you of that.
Richmond Station, turns out, is a very, very busy station at the festival. And we're going to be talking to Carl Heinrich, who is the chef owner of this restaurant. And boy, you have a great team going here. You're originally from BC, but you've been in Toronto how long?
I've been in Toronto now for, I guess, almost 5 years. The restaurant's been open for about 2 years. And Toronto's a great city. This is a really, really well-organized, it's a really great festival. The city has really welcomed it. It's busy, but there's going to be, 20,000 people are going to come through the gates here between the 4 days that it's open. So, yeah, great event.
How did you get to Toronto from British Columbia?
It's a long story, I guess. I moved out here to go to culinary school when I was a teenager. And then I was in New York for about 5 years, and then France for a little while, and back in British Columbia for a little while. And then I moved out to Toronto about 5 years ago. I like the restaurant scene here, I guess. I won Top Chef Canada in 2012, and that sort of got the kickstart to Richmond Station.
What kind of food, how could you characterize the food at Richmond Station? I'm looking now at the burgers going out and chips and what else?
I would just say the food is delicious. To sum up my cooking, we take ingredients and celebrate them for what they are. We buy most of our food directly from the farmer, directly from the producer. So a lot of our food is from Southern Ontario, so our food can be defined as a local cuisine, if you will. And we also use a lot of good and modern technique. The way we handle our meat and our vegetables and our fish is as modern as it gets. And so I like to say that I always like to cook food that my mom would not eat too. So the flavors aren't too complicated. The flavors are pure.
Now the chef scene here apparently is a lively one too. A lot of collaboration, a lot of socializing together and cooking together.
This is, Toronto's got a great chef scene. You're right. There's a lot of collaboration. There's an event every week for us. Last week we were in Stratford doing an event with Save a Stratford. The weekend before that we were in Prince Edward County at Six Barrels, Six Chefs. Next week we're going to be in New Orleans at the Farm to Table Symposium down there. And it's fun, and it's as it should be. These guys work so hard. We've got eight chefs here today in the kitchen pumping out food, and it's important that they go out and they get treated well. They go out and they see other food. They go out and they see other restaurants, and there's a great community of chefs in Toronto that really celebrates that.
Can't have hurt that you won Best Chef Canada.
It certainly can't.
So you have a really steady clientele at Richmond Station?
The restaurant's great. It's super busy. Honestly, it's the most fun that we've ever had. The most fun I've ever had cooking. Again, it's busy all the time, which is great because it's easy to maintain. It's easy to staff. We get to make some really fun and really creative food, and that has a lot to do with how busy it is, and they sort of feed one another.
Give me an example of really fun, creative dish. Fun creative dish you've made.
Well, I think even the burger that we have here today is pretty fun because it's not just a burger. It's kind of cheating. So if we want to put a burger on the menu, well, we buy a whole steer. We only buy whole animal. So if I want to put a steak on the menu, I buy a cow. If I want to put bacon on the menu, well, I buy a pig. I don't buy bacon. I've never bought bones. I've never bought stock. I've never bought fat to confit with. We only do whole animal. So the burger itself, we take the neck and the ribs and the shanks, and we braise them until they fall off the bone, and then pick the meat, reduce the liquid down to a glaze, fold the two of them together, and then stuff that into the ground meat. And then it's on a fresh bun that we bake daily. It's got pickled onions instead of raw onions. There's a beet relish because, well, we grow a lot of beets here in Canada. and a simple mayonnaise. And it's just a really awesome burger. And you can take the burger and serve a burger, or you can take the burger to the next level. And I think that's as creative as a restaurant can get.
You just sold another burger order. Thanks, Carl, for talking to us. And continued success with your restaurant. And you're having full success here at the festival, I can see. Thanks.
Okay, well, thanks very much. And I look forward to seeing what you write here.
Yes, it's a little chaotic at this booth because everybody seems rushing for the food. Yeah. Corey Vitiello. That's an Italian name. I speak Italian. I'm Italian. Anyhow, you have two restaurants.
I do. Both restaurants on Harvard Street. We have the Harvard Room and THR & Co. just around the corner.
And what sort of food do you do?
We are a neighborhood restaurant above all things, so we really try and cater to the area. We like to be accessible to everyone, so bring the kids, bring the grandparents. More than anything, we focus on fresh seasonal food, done in a really kind of accessible but still fun, whimsical way. A lot of Spanish and Italian influence, of course, with our heritage and just our preference of cooking. But again, there still are a lot of North African influences. So we do cover a lot of area, but everything is done in a very accessible, concise way. There's no real confusion on the plates. It's just, it's a lot of clear flavors, simple food, neighborhood food, and just above all, casual and friendly.
And so what are you serving here at the festival?
We have three things here, and there's a couple. Yeah, there are a few things from each restaurant. So we have a chilled heirloom tomato and buffalo mozzarella soup with charred sourdough breadcrumbs, white balsamic and tomato sorbet. And then we have a griddled crab and prawn roll with spicy pickled cucumber, avocado, crispy bacon, and Old Bay chips. And then for dessert, we're doing a pistachio olive oil and semolina cake with preserved Ontario strawberries and Ontario strawberry ice cream.
What dish from your restaurants are you signally known for?
The one dish that's not here at the Harvard Room, we kind of fallen into the burger restaurant category. So we have a burger that has been voted best burger in Toronto by Toronto Life over 2 years, and I'd say 50% of our orders. It's just a really simple burger. I mean, the best thing about a burger, to me, is the quality of the meat and the quality of the bun, and everything else is just, to add to that. So we have a beautiful, really soft brioche egg bun, and then we grind in-house daily 50% brisket and 50% dry-aged chuck, and the key is to do it daily, and you get a bit of dry-aged meat in there. It gives it some really good kind of stink and body to it. And we're able to cook it medium rare because we do grind in-house daily.
What do you think of this trend for people designing these $1,000 burgers?
I think a burger is one of the true simple comfort foods, and it should just be left at that. Yeah, I mean, it's fun to have elaborate burgers, but for me, I'm a simple burger and a beer sitting at a bar guy. And that's my take on it, so we try to keep it as true to that as possible.
Do you eat this poutine stuff?
I have a guilty pleasure that I cannot shake of poutine with bacon gravy. And I eat it a little more than I should. I'm trying to cut back on it, but I do embrace the poutine. Yes, I do.
Well, it's interesting. All these Torontonians have been complaining to me that New York chefs are messing up the poutine. And, of course, I find out that poutine originally is a corruption of the word that originally meant mess.
That's actually a good fun fact. I'm glad you told me that. You know what? I think poutine should be left in Canada. That's one of the things. If you don't get it, then just stay away from it. It is, in Toronto here, I know we have a lot of poutine shops, and it's becoming a little bit bastardized. I know the Quebec folk don't like us messing with their national or their provincial product, but we have some pretty good chops to put out a good poutine, but I think you have to stick to the true form. It's got to be a thick gravy, and it's got to be proper cheese curds and crispy fries. Just those three items, and you're good.
Okay, Corey Vitiello, thanks for talking to us. And your restaurants once again are?
The Harvard Room and THR & Co.
You heard it here. Now, why is it that a guy from Leeds is cooking in Toronto?
Well, when I was young, my dad worked for Rolls-Royce in Barnoldswick and grew up there for a bit, and they wanted to give us a better opportunity. They thought it was a country that was burgeoning, that was hiring a lot, so they moved us over here, and we stayed. And I remember being in the library, looking at pictures of Canada, and it was all ice and igloos, and I was like, no, no, no. But we ended up here, and And here I am today. Yeah.
Now, of course, we didn't say who we're talking to. It's Ben Heaton, Chef Ben Heaton, whose restaurant is The Grove in Toronto. And what kind of a restaurant is this?
Well, we're a...
You're not serving British food.
We're not we are serving food that has a little bit of English flair to it. So my training background, I train extensively throughout England under a lot of top chefs in my younger days. And then we
name some.
Name some. It was Gary Rhodes, Jason Atherton, so a couple of big guys. Yeah, a few guys. A few of the big hotel guys at the times. Yeah, it's got a bit of the English background to it. It's not your typical restaurant where you go and choose an a la carte menu. We offer a set menu per day. The menu changes daily. We offer a vegetarian option and an omnivore option, all different items, and it's a five-course, $55 prefix menu.
That sounds pretty straightforward and cool.
Straightforward, yeah.
And what do you... serving up here at the festival?
At the festival today, we're serving up a really traditional English dish, a Scotch egg. It's but we're using duck eggs instead. I find the duck eggs to be nice and creamy, really hold the yolk well. We made a really nice sausage mixture. We're serving with pilili, which is a classic English accompaniment, mustard, pickled veg, and a little bit of curried ketchup. We're also serving a pea salad, English pea salad. We've got some whipped fresh sheep's ricotta, a little bit of roasted lemon, and some pea meringue. And we have a pork dish that's served with a bit of grilled octopus, sweet corn puree, and a bit of black garlic emulsion.
No mushy peas.
No mushy peas. No, all fresh here. No marrow peas.
And what about pudding?
Pudding, no puddings at the festival this time. No, maybe next year, but we got some really good puddings at the restaurant. So.
Now, you're probably enjoying all the multinational influences in Toronto.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great city. It's a city that's built upon international people. I've got a lot of good friends in this city now that come from different places. The good thing about being a chef is a very tight industry, so you become good friends with everybody, and everybody's got different backgrounds they're bringing forward. A lot of young chefs are now opening their own restaurants, and you're seeing that background come through, which is exciting for Toronto because it's really building a culinary industry that...
And don't go away, because we'll be bringing you three more of Toronto's Top Young Chefs right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Okay, sweetheart, who's coming up next?
Yeah, well, we've got more chefs.
Yeah, what a surprise.
Yeah, and we have one of our favorite dishes also at the Taste of Toronto, the Outdoor Festival, was Stuart Cameron, who has two restaurants, Patria and Biblos.
He actually has three. I can't just off the...
Yeah, right, he has three.
Can't just out of my memory remember the latest one.
Yeah, but the Patria, I mean, I could smell that saffron cooking and the paella, two big paella pans, wonderful. And then we went off-site to interview a chef that did a pop-up in a restaurant called Yours Truly. And then we stayed, and we ought to mention that we stayed in the hotel where Victor's restaurant is, and it was a wonderful hotel.
It's called Le Germain. There are actually two Le Germain hotels, so the one you want to stay on that we can recommend is on Mercer Street. And the chef, who's a very thoughtful fellow.
Yes, he is.
Is David Christian. I think that the restaurant's actually called Victor, not Victor's.
Victor.
And I don't know that we ever got an explanation of why that was, but we certainly got an excellent explanation of what David was trying to do in the kitchen, and I'm sure you'll find it very interesting.
I can smell the saffron from here, Chef Stuart Cameron. We've snatched you away from your wonderful big paella pans. I'm going to taste that as soon as we stop this interview. You are originally from Australia. You were in someplace else, I don't remember where, but generally grew up in Melbourne. And now here you're in Canada, and you're executive chef at three different restaurants. Tell us what those restaurants are.
Well, I've been here for 8 years since I've left Melbourne, Australia. The three restaurants I run, Patria, which is a traditional Spanish restaurant, we opened about a year and a half ago. I also have West Lodge, which is an American kind of burger concept. It's like all about big meats and all those kind of fantastic American foods. And we just opened Biblos, which is a Middle Eastern restaurant. So all the flavors from the Middle East, Turkey, Israel, very similar to the kind of cooking like we do at Patria, which is that kind of, you know, fun, rustic kind of beautiful food.
Now, which of these are your favorite is your favorite of the three, or is that asking you to name your favorite child?
I guess so. Yeah, it'd be unfair to pick one. But Biblos, I just opened, and I just traveled the Middle East last year, and for me, it's definitely something I really wanted to open. So,
I just was wondering what your preferences were for cooking. You said that your idol is Marco Pierre White.
Yeah, well, I started cooking when I was 14. So, and French is obviously what we learn when we go to trade school in Australia. So, and he was definitely the chef to follow when I was 14. So, he would be my idol chef, I guess.
How did you end up in Toronto?
Well, I came here for a Canadian woman. Always the case, yes. And I've been here ever since, and it's working out great for me.
Now, we've been to Valencia, and we've gone to an authentic restaurant, paella restaurant, where the pans had to be cooked on a wood fire. The rice and the water had to be from a... But there were all these rules, such as not to put meat and seafood together in a paella. Do you have such rules?
Definitely not. Well, I'm not from Spain, obviously. So, our concept is... it's just about our version of Spanish food. There is no rules for us. It's just basically, you know, we try to be, follow the traditions of Spain, but then also incorporate our own kind of twist on everything.
Well, now, have you changed your menu at the festival for every different day, or has it been the same menu, like paella every day?
Yes, we serve three different foods, one from West Lodge, one from Patria, and one from Biblos. And it's the same dishes for the 4 days. We do like about 14 large paellas a day, so over 160 liters of stock a day, and over 60, 70 kilos of rice every day. So it's a lot of work for us, and today's the last day, so we've enjoyed it, but we're thankful it's the last day.
Now, what have you found really interesting about being a member of the chef group in Toronto?
Toronto's a growing city, and for me, it feels a lot like Melbourne in a way. Melbourne just has those beautiful little alleyways and all those kind of little areas where restaurants kind of hide out. And I think Toronto will be there very shortly. And it's definitely a big foodie city, and chefs are working really hard to, you know, push themselves to create, you know, a really good vibe in Toronto.
What do you miss about Australia?
I miss my parents. I haven't seen my parents for a while. But my dad's coming. It's his 20th birthday. So he's going to be here in... 70th birthday. He's going to be here in... he's going to be happy. How many? 20. He's going to be here in a week. I miss everything. Melbourne, like, it's where I grew up. So all my friends are there. And the cooking, the chefs there, and all the food there is... Melbourne... Yeah, I miss Vegemite, yeah. And all the chefs in Melbourne are, you know, they're fantastic, and they're really definitely gastronomic city of Australia. So
I miss Guinea Gold iced coffee.
The experience of Taste of Toronto has been fantastic. They're all about food, and, you know, that's why they do this festival. It's just about food. There's not much else here but food. So the organizers really organized. Every tent has its own plumbing and own gas and sinks and running water, and it's a fantastic setup, and the organizers really know what they're doing.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and I'm hoping to get some of that paella.
No problems on the house for you. I hope it's as good as Valencia.
Yeah, I keep wondering about the name of this place, Yours Truly. We're talking to Lachlan Kuljak, and who's the chef. You probably know, why is it called Yours Truly?
I honestly have no idea why they named this place Yours Truly. When I first heard the name, I thought of plus size lingerie store. So I really don't know. This would be a better question for one of the owners, but it definitely catches your ear and has worked out pretty well for us.
I should start by saying that the atmosphere is just really pleasant. It's an intimate space. It has really soothing grays and some metallics and a communal table, as well as a fine bar and individual tables. How many do you seat here?
We seat about 42, including the bar.
And you have a resting artwork as well?
As far as I know, it's the Yours Truly man. A skinny snowman or potentially some sort of bird-like creature. He graces our business cards as well as our door. He's definitely a point of conversation.
Well, it's true. Now, you have been here for a little bit, but you've traveled and cooked all over the world. You're originally, though, from Nova Scotia, so that means you probably have a great deal of sensitivity to seafood. But tell us a little bit about where you've wandered all over Europe and so forth, and what are your main influences in your cooking style?
Well, to start, I definitely am very fond of fresh seafood. Definitely holds a strong place in my heart. We feature a lot of it on our menu right now, especially in the summer. It's so nice. Yeah, traveling, I spend a lot of time in Europe, specifically Austria, Copenhagen, and Paris, eating, traveling, and cooking. Spent a little bit of time at Noma, and as well in the Austrian Alps at Schloss Prilau at Meyer's restaurant. Great experiences, really definitely helped mold my skills and my inspiration. And it definitely comes through in my food today.
Well, you also worked in New York with Paul Ebrand, which has to have been a trip. You said you learned a great deal from your experiences at Cortone. What specifically did you learn?
The most important thing that I learned there, flavor combinations, modern technique, and a real eye for plating as well. Paul was constantly on the pass, so devoted in his kitchen. I really took away that sense of pride and devotion to the food, and I try to model myself after that. Yeah, it was an amazing experience, and I think he gets a reputation as a hothead, which is not very fair. He's very passionate about his food, and it really, that's the most important thing. And I try to model myself after.
So you're not a hothead?
No, absolutely not.
I'm looking at the menu here, and you have a section on shared food, and we're sitting at a communal table. How does this all work into your program?
Well, the way we like to do it is, we were doing menus, and essentially what we've done now is deconstructed the tasting menu so that you can come in and build your own tasting menu. There's a lot of shared items that are great to start with or interspersed throughout the menu as well. And then there's more composed dishes that share or enjoy on your own.
Walk us through some of your favorites on this menu, describing sort of your intentions with each dish.
A staple on our menu right now is the queso. We take really, really nice local Ontario Hewitt's dairy, and we make a fresh cheese, a little bit of rennet and yogurt, and then we lightly hay smoke it. And that's been served from spring up until now with vegetables, wild herbs, and pickles of the moment. Whatever is freshest, nicest, brought from farms and fields. And you really get a feel for the terroir of Ontario through that dish. We kind of call it our gargouille. So it's kind of inspired by Michel Bras, but definitely has our own twist on it. Another one that has been on our menu on and off since the beginning is our saba. And this is has been brought to us by our former sous chef, Tsuya Shimizu. This is a beautifully prepared, very simple, lightly cured and vinegared mackerel, Atlantic mackerel, from off the coast of Nova Scotia, sustainably caught. We slice it thin, and half is torched and half is just served as it is with different accompanying sauces that really highlight the fish. This is definitely one of our favorites and a real crowd pleaser as well. On to the larger plates, might want to call them mains, the Eversome duck, which we get from a local Mennonite farm. We sous vide it and then lightly pan roast it. And it's just probably one of the nicest pieces of protein that you'll ever come across. Beautifully tender and very flavorful. We age it for usually about 14 to 18 days.
Why is it called Everlasting Duck?
Everspring Duck? That does, doesn't it? That's the name of the farm, and we definitely like to represent our local farmers.
Now, you also have an active drinks program. Tell us a little bit about that. I have two sheets here, mixed drinks, which include things like stirred and shaken. We have bubblies. Tell us about your program.
Well, our program is an amalgam of John Bunner, our mixologist here, very, very talented bartender, and Dan Hawkins, our one of the owners, who handpicks everything, and it's always changing, like our menu. It's very well received here.
Since you spent time in Noma, and since this can be a pretty chilly part of the continent, did you catch any tricks on foraging, or what do you do in the winter?
Like they do there, we forage all summer and then cure, ferment, salt to preserve for the long winter that is Ontario.
Well, it sounds to me like this is a really exciting place to be, and I would like to hang here even longer. Sorry we have to leave tomorrow, but we'll be back. Save a place at the communal table for us, and thanks for talking to us.
Thank you so much. It was great to have you here, and we'd love to cook for you when you make your way back. Thank you.
Boy, I got to experience a lot of different cultures eating in this restaurant, and we're going to talk to the chef now, David Christian, with an unusual spelling, David, with a Y instead of an I, and your restaurant is actually Victor in the Hotel Le Germain in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. It rolls off my tongue. Thank you so much for wading through all the airline mishaps we had and to present us with such fine food. Give us a little idea. You are a native Canadian.
Sure, I'm a native Canadian from Niagara. I grew up in Niagara and moved to Toronto when I was 18 as I started my formal cooking apprenticeship.
And you fell in love with cooking sort of inadvertently, and you saw a future in it. You went to culinary school, and then what really got you hooked on the chefing routine?
Well, I did get hooked on cooking. My grandparents were farmers, and I think I started cooking before cooking became very popular, and certainly before it was famous on television. To me, it was very important that as a cook, you represented the seasons and you tried to do something for the farming community. We were cooking with asparagus in December. We were cooking with, tomatoes all through the year. We were cooking game meat in the summer. Nothing really made sense. Nothing had harmony. And as I sort of grew in the trade from apprentice to cook to my first restaurant job as a chef, to me, I was decidedly going to follow the seasons and pay homage to my heritage, my grandparents, as they were farmers, fruit farmers.
I was a little startled. You said your heritage was Ukrainian, which, of course, is much in the news now. And it has a particular type of cuisine. But you're immersed in a city that has, I mean, you have most everything here. You have Asian, you have Indian, you have Mexico, you have everything here. How have all these cuisines influenced your style?
We are very fortunate in Toronto to have so many different influences all around us. And that certainly, at this point in my life, plays the biggest role in what we do in Victor Restaurant. We cook something called the Toronto Tasting Menu, where we're allowed to extract the best parts of each of these cuisines and put them on the menu. And in that, and over the course of the last couple of years, as we train, as we cook all of these very authentic recipes, all of a sudden they start to merge together. You know, I think that we're at the beginning of something brand new that I like to call Toronto cuisine.
Now that's interesting. I mean, you were talking about something else a little bit different. What you described was coming after the farm-to-table movement, and I can't remember the term you used, and then you're moving on here, and you think that it's beyond ethnic Toronto. Could you just elaborate on that? Because I think it's a really interesting idea.
Thank you. the term was local ethnic, and it was sort of the evolution of farm to table. But as farm to table became rudimentary, you needed to have, or farmers started to grow more interesting ingredients. And with these ingredients, you were able to cook very authentic recipes from other people's homelands, which make up the fabric of Toronto. And so from that, and learning how to use these new ingredients, which are all still really farm to table, they just take something to a brand new place and help with the evolution of food. Although it's not so much the evolution of food in modern gastronomy or, molecular technique. It's about paying so much attention to all of the different things that have come in the past or come from the past.
We have some idea of your attitude, I'm going to call it, towards food or your philosophy of food. I'm looking at a menu here. Could you pick out, just because our listeners love to have a little food porn put in here, could you explain or describe some of your dishes that really exemplify what you've just been talking about the evolved ethnic?
Well, this is our summer version of the menu. And as Toronto in the summer, especially in a hotel, does quiet down, so as we get into the fall, it's going to expand a little more than it has already. But perhaps two of our most popular dishes are the sushi pizza, which was actually invented in Toronto in the early 80s. The idea of it was to take sushi and turn it into something which was very popular, which was pizza. You start with a crisp or a deep-fried rice pancake, and on top of it, and that's sort of like the wheat crust of a pizza, and on top of it, you sort of build sashimi or lightly seared tuna. We use some hot mustard to give it a little bit of spice and heat, pickled vegetables for some crispness and, a sour counterpart, especially to the richness of the fish. And then we finish it with a miso butter that we sort of glaze under the salamander, and that provides that sort of salty cheesiness that you'd be looking for from a pizza, of course. But all of the flavors are very, very rooted in a Japanese tradition. And another one, we have a very big Indian population, Southeast Asian population in Toronto. And so paying homage to Little India, or a neighborhood that is located at Girard and Coxwell, which is in the east end of Toronto, we do a version of butter chicken, which is everyone's favorite go-to Indian chicken dish. And it's generally a stew of chicken that's cooked in tomato and cream, spiced with cardamom and star anise. In lieu of that, we marinate the chicken in coconut milk and then fry it as though you might fried chicken, so it's really crisp instead of being stewed. And we serve that on a tomato and cream sauce with basmati rice and peas and a little bit of yogurt mixed with mint and cucumber. So it's all the flavors of sitting in an Indian restaurant, but it's sort of taken to that new place where southern fried chicken meets Indian spices.
You know, a lot of this food that you're describing is pretty rich. I'm looking at you, and you don't eat this food. What do you cook at home? Because you're one of those people called skinny chef.
It's funny. You know, the skinny chef is the one that's really running around and still working pretty hard. I eat one meal a day traditionally, and I guess that's why I have the shape I have. I run all through the day, and then I gorge at night. I sleep it off, and I guess there's the hardworking Ukrainian metabolism in the backbone somewhere.
Okay, one last question here. You're looking over the whole, a whole lifetime of changes, and in Toronto. Just, do you have a thumbnail you could present to what you see happening here?
For Toronto in general, we're at the best place restaurants have ever been. There is a community of like-minded people who are sharing information. There is a like-minded community of people who are not afraid to use canvas of our multiculturalism and the mosaic of the people who live here as what we want to define as our cuisine. We are Canada's largest city, North America's fifth largest city, And with that, I think we're starting to gain the confidence as a restaurant culture that has to go with being a city that big. We're carving our own identity. And that will happen over the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, you're not only a chef with talent and good flavors, but you also have a good mind. And thank you for talking to us.
It's been my pleasure. And please enjoy the festival all weekend and your stay with us at Hotel Le Germain.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
And for our final segment from this week's program about Toronto, Canada, and Taste of Toronto, we have, I think, what you might call a Toast of Toronto.
very clever,
Peter. Well done there. We were absolutely incredibly surprised to discover that 66 Gilead, a craft
distillery,
I think would be say a tiny distillery, has the absolutely most outstanding array of liquors that they make themselves. In the fine tradition, I guess, of Canadian bootlegging, but a modern tradition, a couple who just decided that they wanted to make good booze.
Yeah, they were doctors.
And the whole family is involved in it, and they said, you know, we're really too busy, because they really were very busy. And they said, we didn't have time for an interview, but I said, please, please, please. And the owner, the lead owner, Sophia, agreed she would
Fantastic.
Do that.
She's great, and, yeah.
This is one to write down in your most secret place and wait until it becomes available in larger quantities. Because right now you can only buy it in Canada.
But they're going to grow.
And they're
vodka is out of sight. Yeah. I mean,
well, it's all just great booze. Here's Sophia to tell you all about it.
There's never a good food festival without a good distillery, and we found one. We're going to be talking to Sophie Pantazzi, who's the owner of 66 Gilead Distillery, and this is the address of your distillery. How did a nice lady like you end up making booze?
Hello, it's a little bit of a Breaking Bad story. My background is in biochemistry. And I've always been interested in flavor and flavor in food and flavor in botanicals. So the idea is to put these two together and create spirits where our mandate is to create the best tasting spirit rather than volume, rather than marketing. We believe in quality spirits, and that starts with quality ingredients and controlling the process from the beginning. We're what you call a grain-to-bottle distillery in that we take the grains in or whatever our input material is. We ferment it ourselves, we distill it ourselves, and we bottle it ourselves. This way we have complete oversight of the entire process. And we don't produce anything unless it's perfectly to our standards of quality.
You have a very extensive line for somebody who's just starting out. I've been tasting vodkas, and they were very interesting. Talk to us a little bit about, like, your different grains and also your pine.
The vodkas were a little bit of an interesting experiment because I hear a lot of people saying all vodkas taste the same. Well, they're talking about neutral grain spirits from corn, which is what many commercial vodkas are made from. So we put on our bottle the grain that the vodka comes from because we want to show that handcrafted vodkas have different flavors depending on the grain of origin. For example, we have a wheat vodka made with whole wheat. We have a rye vodka from 100% rye. And people are surprised that they taste very different from each other.
And of course, your pine vodka, which chefs are just totally all over the world entranced with the flavor of pine now, pine needles. And it was extraordinary, the tasting of the vodka, the pine.
The pine is actually distilled like a gin, but because it doesn't have juniper, we do not use the gin nomenclature. And the idea of using pine was because it's white pine grows well in our area in Prince Edward County, and we wanted to create spirits that reflect the identity of our area. And we also want to create more unique spirits, something that hasn't been done before. So what we did is we collected fresh pine needles in the spring, and we redistilled our wheat vodka and vaporized it through the fresh pine needles to pick up the aroma of the pine, but subtle, not resiny, very aromatic and citrusy.
Now, one of your best sellers is your gin. Now, that is a natural botanical, because that's what gin is, right?
Yes, and again, our gin is called Loyalist Gin, and we try and make a gin that would have been made 100 years ago, in that we use our whole wheat vodka rather than neutral grain spirits as a base. We grow the juniper on our farm as well. We grow lavender. These grow well in the county, which we use in our gin, as well as fresh hops flowers, because our farm was a hops farm.
Now, shochu is a sort of another different direction. Tell us about that one.
That is a different direction. Pete and I travel a lot, and we really like a lot of Canadians, Asian cuisine. And we found that we have difficulty drinking wine with it. Sake tends to be too sweet, and beer is very filling and fattening for the ladies, while soju, having only 40 calories for 2 ounces, is the perfect accompaniment for Asian cuisine. And so we researched Japanese-style sojus and decided to create one with Canadian grains, barley and rice that we bring in from California, and roasted sesame from Korea for a very flavorful soju.
This is really sort of a throwback era. You're ready to do bootlegging prohibition style all over again in a free trade mode.
It feels like it. Our province, just as many states in the U.S., are still dealing with laws created during prohibition. And slowly, I think we're becoming a little bit more sophisticated and understanding of spirits as something different nowadays. And the laws are loosening slowly but surely.
Well, you must be sure to let us know when you go into broader distribution in Canada and then in broader distribution across the 49th parallel south to our land. Oh, yeah, and Anne's reminding me. How many members of the family are involved? There are several branches, and your entire exhibit is manned by members of your family. Your husband's name, his name is, which cannot be a bad thing.
We're a family-run business, and yes, everybody in our family is involved in production, sales, marketing. I always believe that we can represent our product ourselves better than hiring people who don't know us, don't understand what we're doing, and are just marketing the.
Your flavors are clean and distinctive, and so is your packaging. The bottles are really simple but elegant. And I'm so really glad that we found you, and I wish you'd expand so we could have it all the time.
Thank you very much.
So there you have it for this week's program. We hope you'll join us again same time, same place for more of Taste of Toronto and some of their wonderful chefs that you can meet when you're there. And until next week, we should say
bye-bye.